You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Well, 2022 was quite a year. War, supply chain, disruptions, shortages, inflation, stock market crashes. But here we are. We're in 2023. What could possibly go wrong and what could go right? Well, with us now is our good friend, Eric Haddock, Inside Track Trading. And we're going to talk about what happened in 22 and where we're heading in 23. Eric, welcome back to the show.
Oh, well, thanks for having me back, Kerry. Glad to be here.
Hey, me too. So last year was quite a year in so many ways. Inflation was the big thing at home, but also we're looking at supply chain disruptions globally, oil, gas shortages in Europe, the euro really getting hammered, the dollar reigning supreme. What can we look forward to in 2023?
Well, I think you're going to see the extremes of some of those trends you just talked about and some pretty significant reversals, and primarily focused on the dollar in that regard, that since early 2021, I've explained why I thought that both the 1 to 2 year and 3 to 5 year and even 5 to 10 year cycles in the dollar were all pointing to a final rally into from early 2021 into early to mid 2023. And I thought and still think that that would complete a 15 year uptrend in the dollar index. It bottomed in 2008. And from that point forward, we would start to see a pretty seismic shift in the dollar's strength, in the dollar's global role. And I think that the seeds have been planted for that, but they're only beginning to sprout. And it's going to be in the coming years when you start to see things shift where that's concerned.
All right. So you're talking about the dollar not being a reserve or the world's reserve currency. Is that what you're implying there?
Well, and even something like that would certainly be most likely be a slow, steady evolution. But I've kind of detailed over the last 6, 7, 8 years where China, as a very astute and savvy competitor, has been laying the groundwork for global dependency on the yuan and for a global shift away from the dollar. And I think one of the most recent examples of that, they've already had, starting their own gold exchange a few years ago and different things that they have entered into with some major national organizations and unifications, both in the East and in the East in Russia. But the most recent thing was in early December, the big agreement they came to with Saudi Arabia and the Gulf Cooperation Council to buy a lot more oil. And then as you read the fine print under there, there's just one little nuance to that. And that is that it would be priced in yuan. And, for 40, 50 years, one of the big things that's kept the dollar at the peak of the global pecking order has been oil priced in dollars. And there's been this steady movement trying to get away from that. And I think that was just another notch in that whole whittling away at the dollar supremacy. And again, it's not something that just magically you flip a switch and it goes from one to the other, but you can look back over the last 5 to 10 years and see multiple major moves, economic moves that China has made to set themselves up to be a major global economic competitor. I mean, they already are, but to take that to another level. And, you know, whether that takes some form of crisis that ushers in this shift or what it may be, that remains to be seen. But the ducks are certainly in a row for that to take place. And really, you can trace a lot of that philosophical shift back to the Western economic meltdown of 2008, 2009. And you started to see immediately after that, a lot of nations from, like I said, your Far Eastern nations, but then even your Near Eastern nations, all starting to reconsider the dollar's role and Western role in the global economy. And so they've been setting things in motion over the last decade plus to address that.
Mm-hmm. All right. So then we go to gold. Obviously, that's got to have an effect on the price of gold, doesn't it?
It does, but gold has such a inconsistent relationship with the U.S. dollar and the dollar index. So often traders just think that it has to go 180 degrees opposite of the dollar. But there have been more times over the last 5 to 10 years where the two of them traded in sync than there have been that they traded in opposition. So it's never just a look at one and assume the inverse correlation for the other. There's always different factors. You go back to a year ago, exactly a year ago from now. And as things were beginning to rumble in the Russia-Ukraine situation, the dollar and gold were surging in lockstep. And that's because the euro was getting hit. So you kind of have this three-way situation where you've got the dollar, you've got gold, and whatever might be the other focal currency in traders' minds. And depending on which one is getting the strongest emphasis, if for some reason gold was leading the pack, then you might see both of those competing currencies dropping. Or if the dollar suddenly very strong or very weak, as I'm saying could happen out over the 1 to 3 year time horizon, then you might get the opposing currencies and gold rallying at the same time. So just a straight forward inverse correlation is dangerous to try to trade off of. But with that said, I have been saying that I thought late 2022 would be a multi-year bottom in gold, and that gold and silver were in for a couple of strong rallies in 2023. And I still think that's the case. Now, on a near-term basis, we have just hit the 3 to 4 month targets that I've published since late last year. And that was right around 1890 to 1910 in gold and 24 to 2450 in silver. So I think they're probably going to put in an intermediate top right here. And it might even coincide with today's CPI numbers. You often get a buy the rumor, sell the fact, or a sell the rumor, buy the fact reaction to numbers like that. But I think that could usher in an intermediate peak and pull back. But if gold and silver get back to the support levels that I'm watching and can hold them in probably February, then I think we would be ready to see a new rally. And like I said, I think there's going to be multiple rallies in gold and silver during 2023, leading into a more important cycle peak later on in the year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so oil. Right now, it's been trending a little bit down. It's still trading a pretty good price. I mean, upwards of $80 a barrel. Are we going to see more volatility in the oil sector this coming year?
I certainly think so. And I was looking for January to be a multi-month low in crude. It actually, there still is a chance for a final spike low in crude later in January. It hasn't yet confirmed that a bottom is intact. But from a price standpoint, it's been right down to major support around the $70 a barrel level. And so even if it does have another spike down there, it would probably just be a little bit below that support and then turn around. But there are definitely factors that look like they could push crude up for one more rally, perhaps even back to the 2022 highs. Particularly if a monthly trend indicator that I watch remains positive. But that could be into mid-2023 when 6 to 12 month cycles and some other timing indicators come into play.
Okay. What about natural gas? Are you tracking that?
Yes, very much so. And in August, September of last year, it completed a two-year uptrend and was expected to retrace from its peak up around 10, 11 bucks down to 3 to 350, which is where it is bumping down against right now. And that is major support on a multi-year basis. And even from a wave standpoint, anyone that's familiar with Elliott Wave and other similar wave tracking techniques, that right around that 340 level is where the previous bottom was seen in not the major low, but the last low before it surged into third quarter of last year. So the lows from very late 2021, early January 2021 as well. That was when it entered its most accelerated rally. And so from a wave perspective, that low is considered the fourth wave of lesser degree. It's the fourth wave low before that major fifth wave advance. And so once the market completes an overall five wave uptrend, it'll often go back to that previous low, that fourth wave low. And that's even reinforced in a wave perspective by the highs that were set during the initial rally back in November of 2020, also right around 340. So that's been kind of a pivot balance point for a couple years here. And that was and still is the major downside target. So I think that we are going to be putting in a bottom right around this 340, 350 level. And then you'll see natural gas start to trend up. But I'm not expecting anything like we saw in over the last year or two. It's probably going to be more of a wide, volatile trading range.
Obviously, though, the case in Europe is quite distinct from the case in the U.S. With the Russian natural gas shortages, green agenda, all these things. The price of nat gas and Europe's totally divorced from the price here, isn't it?
Well, and that's one of those things, too, where looking out as traders start focusing on winter 2023-2024, that's when you could certainly see it, because throughout last year, throughout 2022, Europe was doing its best to prepare and stockpile natural gas for the current winter. So you didn't see quite as dramatic, at least where shortages were concerned. But if nothing changes over the next 6 months, and then as you get past the middle of this year and traders start to focus on the coming winter, yeah, that could have a dramatic impact where that's concerned.
All right. And so interest rates, bonds, all of this fits in well, right?
Yeah. And I think bonds, so talking about longer term interest rates, they have probably already set a pretty significant bottom in bonds, top in those longer term rates. And so, and this is often what you see in a whole interest rate cycle, that even though the Fed is very likely to continue to bump up short-term rates a couple more times, the bonds may have already bottomed and be tracing out a 6 to 12 month bottoming phase. And so my work shows that we had this bottom in bonds in October, which was in perfect sync with a four-year cycle that I've talked about in bonds, both between their highs and their lows. And last year's low came in October, exactly 4 years from the October 2018 low. And the June-July 2020 peak was 4 years from the July 2016 peak, which was 4 years from the July 2012 peak. And so you've got a very consistent four-year cycle working on bonds. And I think that their next important peak will be in the third quarter of 2024. So if we have a bottoming phase here from fourth quarter 2022 into the middle of 2023, then you could see bonds starting to work back up into that next cycle high or interest rate cycle low in mid to third quarter of 2024. So I think you're definitely, as is pretty much the general consensus, you're in a bottoming phase for bonds, in a topping phase for interest rates, and you'll see some stagnation for the first half of this year. But then, you know, there's a decent chance for some economic ramifications of everything we've seen the last couple years that might start to worry the bond market and worry interest rate viewers and observers and start to change that whole dynamic, that whole paradigm later in the year, where they start looking at slightly lower interest rates, and maybe that holds off until the first part of 2024. But that's the broad stroke view of what I'm looking for bonds and interest rates.
All right. And any other markets we should pay attention to here?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canada-focused exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable high-grade gold assets with major drill campaigns planned across its 3.5 million ounce portfolio. Fury is led by a management team of proven explorers and developers with a track record of success in advancing and financing project development. Fury Gold Mines is well positioned to create value for investors with low-risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under the ticker FURY. To learn more, go to furygoldmines.com. That's furygoldmines.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
No, but I think it's good to step back and look at the much broader and multi-decade, multi-generational cycles that for the last decade, I've been focused on 2021, 2022 as being a major shift, particularly in a 40-year cycle that I keep talking about. And I think that you see the symptoms of that, the evidence of that in everything from natural events to market events to geopolitical events. The 40 and 80 year cycle is what was prompting me to project war cycles, particularly for Europe and then for the Far East, to start in late 2021 and go through late 2025. But also climate related cycles, where I've been saying that I thought we would see from 2016 to 2021, a final warm up in global temperatures, but then kind of a peak in the early 2020s. And that doesn't mean that I'm calling for some major cool down or something. It's just that you get these cyclic peaks and cyclic troughs. And One of the things for the last 2 years I've been talking about is how even in the Western U.S., I thought that the drought cycles would peak in 2021-2022, and that California in particular would have a dramatic shift in their precipitation cycles starting this year, this winter, and then again next winter, and that that would have an impact on a lot of things from agriculture to other climate-related market events. And the bomb cyclones and atmospheric rivers of the last couple of weeks are starting to powerfully validate and vindicate that analysis. In fact, back in October, I was writing in my Inside Track at the same time that most of the mainstream analysts were saying we're in for another below normal precipitation, an extension of the drought in California coming in the coming winter. My newsletter was saying that 2022-2023 would begin a dramatic shift in precipitation cycles. And there's just all these natural cycles that have been pinpointing this time frame, 2022-2023-2024, is a dramatic shift. And one of the other things that I've been writing about is solar storm cycles, where I think from a cyclic standpoint, and I stress to my readers, I'm not a not an astronomist, not a scientist where that's concerned, but from a cyclic perspective, I think we have a much higher probability of a major disruptive solar storm in 2023. So there's a lot of natural things that everyone says, oh, they're black swan events, but there really are clues and evidence of them appearing in sequences before they occur. It's just whether anyone is watching or not.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's pretty amazing. Think about it. The drought seems to be over in the Western U.S. I guess I'll believe it when I see Lake Mead start to overflow its banks, Eric, but that's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is. And yes, Lake Mead's another one that a lot of the precipitation hasn't all moved as far inland as yet as we'd like. But you look up and down California and the West Coast, and the reservoirs are all of a sudden up to 75-80% of normal compared to what they were 6 months ago and a year ago. And there's more of these atmospheric rivers on tap to make their way in. But I've also talked about the downside of that being soil erosion and other things that come with flooding that could be challenges in the coming years.
Yeah, like all the mudslides that we see happen too, right?
Yes.
Especially in California. But yeah, I was looking at the numbers. And they're almost back to normal, to average, in a number of the larger ones. A couple of the smaller ones, they're already there. But a couple more days or maybe a week or two of this, which they're expecting, the California reservoirs will be back to their historic average. That's pretty remarkable.
Well, and then you've got the snowpack that's building. Now you have had some of these rains have been a little warmer than they would like, so they've actually started to melt some of the snowpack a little prematurely. But you still have the potential and the expectation for some pretty serious snowstorms in the coming weeks as well. And they always, it's around April when they really start to kind of analyze that and say, okay, how deep is the snowpack? How much should that help us through the non-rainy part of the water year?
Right.
And so that's, you know, then you still got a couple months to kind of see how much or how little all of this precipitation helps looking out over the next 6 to 12 months and 1 to 2 years. But I explained how back in late October, how you just had this whole synergy and convergence of shorter term cycles, a six year cycle that has timed deluges in California, an 11 to 12 year cycle that's very closely related to the sunspot cycle, a 40 year cycle, an 80 year cycle. You go back to the major droughts, which also have occurred on a 40-year basis. You go back to the Civil War drought in the late 1850s to early 1860s, then what was called the Federation drought, which hit more Australia, but also there was drought through Europe and other places in the late 1890s. Then you had the Dust Bowl in the 1930s, and then you had California's real drought starting in the 1970s. And each one of them on this same 40-year cycle, you saw the culmination of those drought cycles and these sudden bursts of rainy years and greater precipitation starting right around 1862, 1902, 1942, 1982. And here we are, 2023 now, on a very 40-year cycle like clockwork. And again, a lot of people don't give any credibility to cycles, but I've been trying to sound the not the alarm, but just
awareness.
I believe the drought cycle was poised to peak in 2021, 2022, and you would get some inundation in the ensuing years, which we've been seeing.
Well, everything is a cycle. And that's the thing. I think people keep telling me, you know, we can't even predict the weather 2 days out, yet we're predicting climate. But we can't predict climate either, because nobody was foreseeing the end of this drought cycle other than you. No one was seeing it, Eric.
Well, and I'm also quick to say that a month or two of inundation doesn't completely change a drought cycle. It's been, the analysis has been partially validated, but there's still a lot of work to be done to really reverse that cycle. But yes, you're right. So often, and I've reached out sometimes to different authors of articles about anything from climate and drought flood cycles to even geophysical cycles, earthquakes and volcanoes. And for the most part, they can't even give any credibility or even acknowledgement that there might be these cycles that they haven't identified. And that's it. You know, if they haven't observed it, then that's what a scientist, you know, knowledge based on observation and proven hypotheses. But when you look back over centuries and millennia, that you see these recurring cycles, but instead, so often, just like when I was talking about, and I back in October, I quoted some of these in my newsletter, the mainstream climate and meteorologists, they're always extrapolating things more on a linear basis. So if we've had three dry years in a row and each one of them has intensified, that means you have to have a fourth year and it has to intensify. Well, that's not how nature, that's not how the markets, that's not how anything works. There's ebb and flow. It's more like a sine wave, not a straight angled line up or down. And so as you are hitting those extremes, that's usually more of an indication that you're nearing a turning point, not that the market or drought or whatever may be the case is going to continue in the same direction. And it never has and probably never will.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. I call this the fallacy of the extrapolators. They think, going back to Eisenhower, he said things are more like they are now than they've ever been before. And they just make the assumption that you can just indefinitely project current trends into the future. And yes, you'll be right for a while in all likelihood, but doesn't work that way. Otherwise, stock market prices would either go up forever or they'd go down forever, right?
Right. It's always most bullish at the top and it's always most bearish at the bottom. That's because everyone's expecting that linear extrapolation to just keep going in the same direction. Well, you can only go down to zero and you can only go up so high too before something new comes into the equation and brings you back towards an equilibrium point.
Exactly. Exactly. Hey, so the stock market, finally, Dow, S&P, NASDAQ, what can we look forward to for the coming year?
Well, I think that the first part of the year is going to see a lot of two-sided action. We definitely fulfilled some major downside targets in in late September, and then some of them retested in November, December. And I think that completed an initial 9 to 12 month decline. I expected and still expect that to be followed by about 6 months of up and down action, sideways action. But as long as certain trend indicators and wave structures are not violated by the middle of this year, I could see another down wave in stocks take hold later this year. So I still think that we've, in many stocks and some key indexes, that we set multi-year peaks in early 2022, and they're not going to be violated for quite some time. You always get your exceptions and certain outliers or anomalies. So, you know, there will be certain stocks and maybe a couple of indexes that are able to spike to new highs. But I think by and large, we've seen a very important peak back in late 2021, early 2022, and that's going to remain the critical resistance and ceiling over many of these stocks for some time to come.
All right. But obviously, there's different sectors in the market. We know that. What about as far as energy stocks go or resource stocks? Is the trend the same for them as the broader market? How does that work?
Actually, energy stocks and in particular the XOI, the gas and oil index, that is actually fulfilling a lot of upside wave targets and price projections and even timing projections. So I think you could be at the point of more of a 3 to 6 month or longer peak in energy stocks. You know, they've kind of been running counter to what a lot of the market has done the last 6 to 12 months. And so that's one of those where I think we're very close to a major peak. But in a lot of your other stocks and indexes, they've been more going through a bottoming phase the last few months.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So they've been bottoming and certainly appears that way. As far as the broader economy of the U.S. And other, I guess, the Western world, for lack of a better one, what do you see there?
You know, that's one of those things that is very general and kind of ambiguous in my work, based on what I was saying about interest rates and the bond cycles. That bonds could, after going through a bottoming phase here later this year and into the middle half of 2024, that bonds could be rallying. Well, you know, the normal correlation would be, okay, if bonds are rallying and interest rates are dropping, is that in response to some economic slowdown and other worrying factors? And often it is. So that's one of those things I'm watching on a very general perspective and waiting to see other corroborating or conflicting indicators and markets and cycles. But I think that you could see some economic stressors later this year and into 2024.
All right. Well, hey, we can't ask you any more than that, Eric. We appreciate your coming on as always. Just tell us the best place to find you these days.
Best place is always at our primary website, InsideTrackTrading.com, and that's inside with the extra I in the middle. So it's InsideTrackTrading, TrackTrading.com.
All right. Hey, and if you got a question for Eric, shoot me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. We will get you an answer pronto. I promise you that. And Eric, really appreciate you coming on, sharing the wisdom of the cycles with us. I almost feel like we're reading tea leaves or your crystal ball is out there, but we do appreciate it. And we know you spend a lot of time. You work very hard, very serious on this. We do appreciate your work and wish you only the best for the coming year. And we'll be playing those cycles for sure.
Well, thanks for having me back, Curry. And I wish the best for you in the coming year as well.
Appreciate it. And we'll talk to you real soon, Eric. Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for listening to Curry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.